Hello, welcome back to Artbeat on CITR 101.9 FM. Today in the studio, we've got a bunch of fun little friends. But before we get into that, I'd like to start off by acknowledging that the land we're gathering and speaking on right now are the unceded ancestral lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Musqueam traditional territory once spanned roughly 1,500 square kilometers, while today the Musqueam Reserve is just under 3 square kilometers. The land here was never given up to the Crown, but was rather stolen without plans for repatriation. This is reflected today by the University Endowment Lands, which occupies over 4 times the size of the Musqueam Reserve. As we gather here, let us honor the Musqueam past and present, who still hunt, fish, and gather on this land south of Marine Drive, while we sit in the studio and have conversation about art and culture. We must remember these things. Now with that, my name is Maya Two. Maya One is also here as well. We'll get into that. And we're gonna go around and introduce everybody. So please, I'll start with my left here.
Hi, I'm fun little friend number one. It's Margot.
And my name's Emma. And I'm Melissa.
I'm Delmar.
Nice voice.
I'm Maya One.
And I'm John.
And
I'm Serena.
Yes. All right, so today we've got VIFF on our minds, the Vancouver International Film Festival. I'm a film bro. I have not gone to a single one yet, but that's a secret that stays between you and I. First off, what VIFF films have we seen around this table? Let's get a little conversation going.
Well, I went to After the Hunt. That was the only one that I went to, and that was the only one I was planning to go to.
We also, me and Alyssa both went to After the Hunt as well. Did you see it at the Playhouse?
Yeah, at the Playhouse.
Playhouse, how is that as like a venue?
It's fun. I went there last year as well. I saw the end because I'm a Tilda Swinton fan. Mm. It's fun. Like, yeah, there's like 2 levels. Like, it feels very open.
It's very gala vibes.
Nice. Gala AF.
Kind of fancy.
Yes.
That's where they usually have like the fancier VIFF events, the movies Wonderful. That are very anticipated, like Knives Out, stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you guys going to go watch that new Knives Out?
Oh, no. There's a new one?
Yeah, there's a third one. I think that's really been run into the ground.
Wait.
I completely agree.
I don't, like, no one needs a third one.
No, I love a good franchise with Daniel Craig in it.
Like, Daniel Craig is wonderful. My one true James Bond. He'll always be my Bond.
Oh, I have thoughts on James Bond, but I don't want to get into it. After the Hunt, what did we think?
Neither of us particularly liked it, not to put words in your mouth, Alyssa, but, I mean, tell us your... You seem more positive, so maybe we'll have some praise first and then criticism.
I didn't have many expectations going into it. I just knew it was a Luca Guadagnino movie, and I tend to like them. And yeah, I did not know that the girls were like fighting over it on Letterboxd.
Like, they were.
They have things to say, and like, I don't know. I think. There were a lot of layers. The characters were very messy, complex. You didn't really know what was going on for a lot of the thing. But for me, I was like focused on the fact that it was set at Yale. For context, this is like kind of like a Me Too story that's centered in a philosophy department at Yale University around 2019.
Yeah.
So the fact that it was set at Yale and it was 2019 was getting to me like, yeah, the dialogue was a bit clunky. The script was kind of all over the place, but to me, I was treating it like a period piece almost.
I took issue with, unfortunately, I just found that Julia Roberts was not a convincing, like, queer baiter.
I also,
Can I say that?
Yeah, okay. I also didn't.
That was my problem. Yeah. It was like, usually his movies are really queer, and I like that. I can get behind it. And Challengers, that was really good. But this. I was just not convinced that any of those people actually.
This is a new filmic phenomenon. Is queer baiting? That's just not even successful queer baiting because it's like I don't believe that like what's her name Miss Substance.
Demi Moore.
No, the other one.
Margaret Qualley.
Margaret Qualley. I don't believe that Margaret Qualley is queer. You know what I mean? Like in that new film.
Isn't she
with
dating like Jack Antonoff?
Yes.
Yes, they're totally
married.
Married.
Not wait, are they?
Is Jack a man?
Yes.
Jack Antonoff is, in fact, a male.
Isn't he the music producer?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
All right. Well, so overall thoughts, like if you were to rate it out of 5, as if you were on Letterboxd, one of the girls.
Oh, I don't know what I would rate it. I just, because, yeah, the script was like ridiculous. The characters weren't that strong. it's like a lot of the dialogue was like, it sounded like whoever was the screenwriter was like trying to talk shit about everybody. It was trying to talk ill about everybody. But it was still, I was there for the ride. Like, I was, like, Julia Roberts was not, I didn't find her to be a convincing queer baiter, but I felt like the focus of the story, like, it was kind of advertised to be a bit more like, oh, there's maybe something going on. Mm-hmm. But I forgot that when I went to watch it. Mm-hmm. And I instead wanted, like, I treated it more so as, like, an exploration of, like, what exactly was up with Julia Roberts the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, even, there's, like, a specific thing that, there's, like, what's it called? Like that special item that, like, anyway, it's like a film term that kind of comes.
A motif?
No, it's like a Chekhov's gun or something. No,
like a red herring?
Not a red herring. Like, you know, like in Pulp Fiction, like the suitcase, like those things that like just have value just for the sake of having
symbols?
Value. No, whatever. They're just a specific item that like gets taken at the very beginning before any of like the actual like
precursor or
an Easter egg?
No, like foreshadowing. Jinx.
I don't even know what it is, what it's called, but I'm not going to try to spoil it, but just before the actual Me Too narrative happens, there's like a specific item that gets taken. So I was mostly curious about that. And I found that.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Is anyone like willing to give us a little synopsis of the film for those who haven't seen it? Just take your best stab at it. Doesn't have to be too.
Yeah, we can give synopsis. Last time Emma and I tried to do this, she kept interrupting me.
But, I won't do that this time. You're on the mic.
So it's like you mentioned, set at Yale, and you have Julia Roberts, who's a philosophy professor, and what's his name, Andrew Garfield, who's also a philosophy professor, untenured, which is important. Both of them untenured. And then A.O. Debris, who is their like grad student, PhD candidate. And they are kind of like in this race for tenure. And Andrew Garfield and Julia Roberts have this funny little like back and forth about them getting tenured and this little like jealousy. And there's like sexual tension between the two of them for sure. And her husband is the dad from Call Me By Your Name.
Michael Stahlberg or something. I thought his name was Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, I'm not good with names. I wouldn't know. Anyway, and he is this sort of, he's an interesting character. I don't know how we describe him, but he definitely like, he's like loves her so much he almost doesn't care that she like flirts with everything.
It's like a lavender marriage, but he's like actually straight.
Yes, yes. Ooh. But yeah. you wouldn't think so watching him. Just kind of
so
hang out.
A marriage.
Like he cooks, he like has his like opera music playing all the time.
Reads Hemingway.
He's a therapist. Yeah.
Psychoanalyst.
Mm-hmm.
That's really key. Yeah. He's like big on Freud.
Yes.
Okay, so
Emma's trying to interrupt me.
Okay, so then basically the plot kind of picks up when, after a party that they all have, A.O. confesses to Julia Roberts' character that Andrew Garfield's character has sexually assaulted her. And we don't get a lot of the details. Julia Roberts is immediately, like, suspicious and kind of meets her with, like, what are you accusing of him? Like, what are you saying happened, basically? Kind of, like, already guessing that this is going to become a big, like, story situation in the department. And then we kind of have the drama that unfolds from there, all of, like, the characters and their conflicts. And Andrew Garfield is fired very quickly. But him and Julia have this, like, really complicated relationship. And at first, we don't really know who to believe, actually. And there's a lot of doubt cast on A.O.'s testimony, if it actually happened, if something else totally different happened, if she's accusing him to have her own kind of, like, to benefit from this situation, if you will.
For context, she also, like, A.O.'s character, like, plagiarized
her dissertation, parts of her
part
dissertation.
Part of her dissertation. No. But
and Andrew's like, oh my god, Julia, did you even see that coming? Like, did you even know? He's kind of accusing her of like not really being, I mean, a good philosopher in that way, I guess.
But he wanted to accuse, like, bring it up to her before he assaulted her. But it's just like that timing of like he wanted to accuse her of plagiarism, but then she had just accused him of assault. But
Yeah, so he's basically saying, I didn't assault her. She's trying to protect herself because whoa. I know she's getting she's plagiarizing. And she's like, whoa, he assaulted me, period. You know what I mean? Those are kind of like the two different stories, I guess, that we're told. And for a lot of the movie, we're meant to, like, we don't know. We're meant to kind of be in this, like, doubt situation, kind of grappling with who to actually believe.
Interesting.
I will say what the movie does well is, like, sort of cast doubt about, like, the situation. And I'll give it credit for that. There was a point where I was like, I don't know if I even believe Ayo Edebiri, which sounds really bad, but it was like, the movie was like leading me to believe that, you know, there was something else going on and that, you know, maybe Andrew Garfield's character didn't really do that. And except I didn't really believe that because the second she accused him, I was like, well, yes. Like, anyway, but the point being, like, there was definitely doubt there. And I think that it did well. But I think the cancel culture or like the canceling sort of message it was trying to make, I wasn't convinced throughout. That's my one thing. So I don't know if you are.
With the concept of believing the victim, where do you think this film like takes a stance on that?
I interpret it as just, I don't know. For me, I never actually questioned her character, like on what she was saying. I think it's because the screenwriter, I don't know, there's an element where Ayo's character is also the adopted daughter of like billionaires, and she like her family donates a bunch of money to the university. So I was like, there wouldn't have been any actual material losses for her from making the act, like from coming forward with her story. And even just the way Andrew Garfield played his character, I was like, that man is guilty,
right? Yeah,
for sure. And also, okay. Ayo's character is also queer and has like a non-binary partner during this situation. So I was like, she wouldn't cheat on, I don't know. It just, I personally didn't question her
Julia
at all.
Julia Roberts isn't non-binary in this.
No.
Okay.
In fact, she's like, she's just from like, her character's from like, from an older generation. So she's transphobic.
Accidentally? Intentionally transphobic. I don't know. I was just like, low-key, like, this is kind of that age-old, like, use the, like, they-them bit as, like, I don't know. I'm just like, I'm sick of that bit. I don't think it's, like, that funny.
Yeah, and it was just
like,
bit.
Yeah, the whole thing where it was like, oh, like, they go away or whatever. And I was just like, this, that's like, I don't know. I'm sick of that bit. It's just, that felt a little, like, trite. But did you think it was meant to be more, like, unintentional? It wasn't meant to be, like, harmful?
Like,
Julia Roberts, do you think she was just being, like...
I think maybe at the beginning she was, she was stumbling through it, but then towards the end she gets a bit...
Oh, interesting.
...argumentative. Yeah. I don't know. I think I was just seeing it as a period piece of 2019 where it's like, damn, I miss that time period every day. Especially there's, like, a jump forward at the end, which is very, like... And the scene at the end was very weird... I don't know. It was just, I still don't know how I feel about it. It was just strange.
Yeah. I think at the end, it was just like, I agree with you. I didn't really question Ayo Edebiri at all. And then all of a sudden, I was like, wait, why are you having me question the victim? I like don't really want to have to question the victim. And I'm like, that feels like a weird place to take this film, you know, where you're just like, maybe... Yeah, like, I don't know about this, like, two-sidedism. I don't know. That was just the one thing I was like, I'm not super compelled by this. That was my thing.
But interesting dialogue there. Did we catch any other films at VIFF, by any chance, or
was that was this... the only one that I saw.
I've seen quite a few.
Do you want to talk about any of them?
Well, we can talk about another one that me and Alyssa saw together yesterday, actually. We saw a movie called Two Prosecutors. Who's the director again? Do you remember?
No.
We took some notes, but anyways, directed by, I think he's Ukrainian. It's about a young prosecutor in the late 30s in Soviet Russia during the Great Purges, Stalin's Great Purges, and his attempt to kind of make right the wrongs that one prisoner has lived through. And the ensuing Kafka-esque bureaucratic hoops he tries to jump through and ultimately fails to realize his goals, I guess.
Like, we don't really want to, like, but we don't want to be misleading. This movie wasn't as good as it sounds.
No. We were both really excited.
We were like, oh, this is going to be so good. You know, I think when we were trying to, like, figure out what it was really about, it got better because we were, like, what is he trying to do? Like, what is the meaning behind all of this? But it was really like three, almost like 2.5 acts, I would say. And like,
there's like 2 acts and a brutal, like 1 second long third act.
And so at first, there's like this prosecutor and he goes to the jail in like, what is it like? You write it down.
I did.
It's a city.
A jail somewhere.
A jail somewhere in the USSR.
In Bryansk.
Okay.
And our prosecutor's name is Korniev.
Korniev, yeah. And he interviews this guy, Stepniak, who sent a letter to the prosecutor's office because he is being tortured.
And ultimately by sent, we mean it got there by some miracle. Like these prisoners, we see at the very opening scene is like a big bag of letters that prisoners have written, all making pleas to have some sort of like just trial, basically. And by some random chance, this old guy who's putting all the letters in the fire picks this dude's little letter written on a piece of cardboard in blood that he wrote, like his own blood, to save. And somehow, miraculously, it ends up making it to the prosecutor's office, like super random, by chance. It's not meant to be there.
No, it's not. And then the prosecutor comes and he's like, gets to the jail and he talks to like the warden on shift. And he's like, I wanted to see this prisoner. Like, it's within his right for me to go. And when we say prosecutor, it's like a prosecuting, it's not really.
It's almost like a DA, like a public prosecutor.
He's supposed to like investigate if this person's like arrest and like imprisonment is done lawfully, essentially. And so he goes there and he tries to talk to him and he gets told that it's like, well, you can't really get approval to talk to people in this special block right now. You're gonna have to wait around all day. And he sort of waits around all day to see if he can get in.
Like 6 hours later, he gets to the next office and they're like, well, you really shouldn't go in because the dude's diseased. You're gonna get typhoid. Like, if you go in there, you're gonna get sick with the same thing he has. Like, it's not going to end well for you, basically. Like, your fate might as well be his fate, rotting in a jail cell, if you go in there.
Mind you, now it's like we're like 30 minutes in the movie, and he still hasn't gotten in to talk to the guy.
And we've had like two still shots. Like,
two still shots.
Everything is
unmoving.
Extremely still. It's also in a almost like square aspect ratio, which just feels
kind of
peculiar. And the rendering, I mean, it's not rendered, but like the visual kind of texture is very like video game rendering kind of vibe, because everybody's yellow, everybody looks sickly. The lighting is super unnatural in these weird little jail cells. It's just very, it's like very ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely didn't want to be there. No. So I'll give them that.
Sounds like a unique watch though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, Emma was really focused on the disgusting.
Did I miss out?
You
I was supposed to go, guys.
Margo was supposed to go. She had a ticket and everything. I don't know. I wouldn't say you missed out.
Do you guys plan to catch anything else at VIFF? I'm trying to go to Nouvelle Vague on Saturday. It's a it's kind of like a Dalmar. No way. Are you trying to go as well? John Craig, perhaps.
Not to that.
Oh, okay. Well,
keep going on about your thing.
Nouvelle Vague. It's like an ode to Jean-Luc Godard's A Bout de Souffle, or Breathless, which one of my favorite Nothing Burger films like ever. Two people falling in love with a beautiful French New Wave setting, and there's so much cigarette smoking and sex. And only a little bit of that.
What?
I mean, there's not that much.
Like what kind?
What kind of sex?
Yeah.
I mean, heterosexual. and I don't know, cigarette smoke filled air.
Are you looking for the word sensual, French?
Yes, I'm. Sensual is the perfect word. Sensual, sultry. Anyway, Au Bout de Souffle, incredible. So I'm really excited for Nouvelle Vague. It's an ode to that. I don't think it'll be as good, but I think it could be great. Right? John, are you looking forward to anything?
Yes, I am going to be seeing a Welcome Distraction. I believe I forgot your name, but you were, Emma's seeing it too on a different day from me. Basically, from what I remember, the synopsis is a guy goes through a family tragedy and then doesn't want to, like, spend too much time with his family, so he tries to distract himself. But the reason it stood out to me is because it is set in Vancouver. And, you know, it's the really, really funny thing of living here where everything is filmed here, but you can't find anything set in your own city, even though everything films in your own city.
So, yeah, Vancouver never plays Vancouver. It's one of
yeah,
the bombs.
It sucks.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to, you know, seeing my own city in a film.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm curious to see how that is. Please tell me about it afterwards.
I'll be on next week.
Awesome. Same time next week. Well, on that note, I think we're going to get into some Discorder featured artists today. Discorder Ooh. Being CITR's resident magazine, kind of a punk publication, if you really think so. I'd say so. So some of these local Vancouver artists we're going to be featuring today, starting off with Cherry Pick. Very cool. I listened to them for the first time today when I was going through our list of Discorder featured artists. They've got a cool sound, so I hope you enjoy.
laughing? Are we still in the dark? Say the last forever does, it does. Takes time and taste to find enough. I know nothing, I know I'll die when I let go. Oh no, go away, stay away, ghost. Go away, stay away. We're popping, it's gone now. Oh, sell me everlasting mercy and leave me alone. This damn rocking horse keeps teetering on now. Oh, oh, the edge of my religion, what lies beyond? I can't tell, but I could see it dull out. Oh, oh, I feel a spirit. Comes with my love, oh love. Nothing they say lasts forever, does it does. Takes time and taste to find enough. I know nothing, I know I'll die when I let go. I'll know, go away, stay away, ghost. Go away, stay away.
All right, you just heard Barking Dog by the Goat String Orchestra, and before that, Doe-Eyed by Cherry Pick, which are two different lovely Vancouver bands that we have some friends with. And I want to just take a second to shout out Goat String Orchestra because they're having their, second edition, their rerun. So they are now Goater Pillar, and they're playing their first set tonight as an established new band at the Painted Ship. I'll be there. All your cool friends will be there.
I'll be there.
Yeah, Margot's going to be there. Like I said, all your cool friends. So everyone should come. For the rest of the episode today, we're just going to be kind of spotlighting some of our bands that we have featured in Discorder, because the new edition of Discorder just came out yesterday. Pretty freaking awesome. It's a really good one too. I like unbiasedly say one of our best, honestly. Some gorgeous articles, gorgeous art. But more importantly, we're featuring a lot of upcoming shows. So we've got some more songs for you, some from Vancouver, some from, you know, everywhere else. But without further ado, this is November/Swim by Luella.
Beautiful day.
Yeah. Are you hungry?
I think I'm hungry. I think we should get ourselves something nice for our beach day.
Oh, yeah?
Oh my God, I know the perfect place. Cockney King's Fish and Chips is literally just around the corner. We should go there. It is the best fish and chips in Vancouver.
Oh my God, yes, absolutely. Let's go right now.
Cockney King's Fish and Chips, Kitsilano. On Cornwall Avenue, between Cypress and Walnut. It's the best fish and chips in town, but don't take our word for it. Try it yourself. If Kitsilano isn't your neighborhood, check out Cockney King's in Burnaby or New Westminster.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke you every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f with Discorder online at discorder.ca. Are you looking to decolonize yourself?
Look, I'm concerned as a matter of fact. Contact, contact, all the shattered and packed. Shake three. Crisis, no longing for truth. Yeah, the long, hard road from here to truth. Shake six. Look, face contort, face the music, the crash. There's a war on stage, stop the glow into ash. Shake nine. Outside the state, somebody's begging for moves. It's the long, hard road.
There's no, no.
All right, that was Playing Classics by Water From Your Eyes, who is playing on November 2nd at the Biltmore. Super lit and awesome. And we have another Water From Your Eyes song that we want to play just because it's one of my favorites of all time. It's actually an Adele cover, but I feel like it kind of puts the song in a new light for me. So, yeah, without any further ado, this is Someone Like You by Water From Your Eyes.
Looking to decolonize your self-care routine? Take a trip down to Sisters Sage for a variety of handmade soaps, bath fizzies, smudge sprays, and salves infused with traditional plant medicines. Sisters Sage is an award-winning local indigenous business run by Tsimshian entrepreneur, activist, and community builder Lynn Marie Angus and her dog TJ. Passionate about crafting wellness products that are respectful of the land we live on, Sisters Sage is committed to a heart-centered approach to self-care as well as our collective healing. Located on 1312 Kingsway, you can drop by from Monday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. See you there.
Hi there. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC Vancouver campus located on the unceded ancestral and traditional lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. We honor the ancestral and ongoing care for this land by the host nations. Media practices are often rooted in white gaze, and we recognize that it is our responsibility to shift our approach and move towards radical empathy. While we broadcast from UBC Vancouver campus, our listenership extends to the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations and beyond. We encourage you to check out native-land.ca, that is native-land.ca, to learn more about whose land and territory you live and work on or may be visiting. Thank you.
Okay, that was Rooster by Bar Italia. And before you got to hear Someone Like You by Water From Your Eyes. And Bar Italia is also coming to Vancouver very, very soon. They're coming November 12th at the Hollywood. We've got just a few other songs for you here. And I want to introduce our next one, which is by Tonk on the album Wildflower. This song is Don't Leave Me Lonesome. And this album is actually at the top of our CITR charts right now. This is our most played, most favorited song by CITR right now. No. Okay. Well, without any further ado, let's get into Don't Leave Me Lonesome by Tonk.
Don't leave me lonesome and don't leave me blue. Falling rain lays on
All right, that was David Bowie, I Love You Since I Was Six, by the Brian Jonestown Massacre, one of my favorites, also coming to Vancouver very, very soon, November 16th. We have two more songs for y'all today, and the next one I'm going to point to Margot to introduce.
Sure, so this one's called Coping Mechanism. It's by Car Culture. And they're actually releasing, I think, a whole album in, like, 2 hours. So maybe you can go check it out. But I honestly just really like this song. And I hope you do, too.
Okay. Coping Mechanism from the Nothing Burger EP by Car Culture. Let's go.